technology, society, regulation, under-regulation. And what we would like to get to by the end of this show, and I hope you'll trust us with your time so that we can finish this, is how should society deal with the new emerging onset of artificial intelligence? And also, how does this change the role of art and society? Is it the same? Is it different? Do we need to protect the older tradition of what art was supposed to be? Or do we need to create a new tradition of what art should be? And do we just need to renegotiate that as, well, in the history and evolution of ideas and philosophy, everything's kind of renegotiated as between the old and the new. Everything's kind of that way.
With the question of whether or not Art Inc. is justified ethically, just because there are some negative connotations to the people of the previous generation before the technology has advanced. But I would fight that maybe they're not that good of an artist if they're not capable of keeping up with technology.
But we are talking.
They're in a business. Like, if they're worried about.
We are talking about technology that. So for reference, these are technologies in the past. And this is why some people are very, very scared. Like, for instance, if you take chess as an example, there are computers that are better than any human has ever been in the whole history of humanity at chess. What if there was a computer that is better is relative, because art appreciation isn't something that's, you know, objective, and the dollars don't make art better than not. So we can't exactly say that, like, what would make art better. And this is something else that I want to bring in here, is that right now AI art and generation feels, it's really hard to explain. And I'm going to pretend that I have the soul of an artist for a little bit. Like, it feels heartless. Like, the art you generate with these artificial intelligence systems, maybe it's because the systems are still in their early stages of development. Artificial intelligence systems are designed on training data. Training data is what's in the past. So these artificial intelligence systems, they try to create things based off of what's already been created. And then the new systems are creating art based off of what the AI systems already created. And you'd think, like, oh, this is going to create infinite possibilities. And it actually creates, like, you know, like when you hear a popular music song and you're like, ugh, another one of these things. It, like, sounds like all the other popular music songs. That's kind of what's happening with artificial intelligence art. It's getting to the point where it, like, it feels like, even when you get all the filters and get all the things, sometimes it feels a little creative when you go and talk to an artist in their home about their art and their relationship to, like, the discipline that they of creating something. That's just a much richer experience, and I don't think AI can actually compete with that in reality. But if all you really care about is money and a product, sure. I mean, like, if you want to make a television ad using artificial intelligence, you can do that with now the technology in the modern day. We can create television ads. You can get a 15-second ad for Pepsi using artificial intelligence, and now we no longer have to hire any artist to draw any of the Pepsi logos.
I was just thinking how clever I am at the way that I'm about to change the course of the conversation.
Go for it.
So maybe at the risk of being a little oversimplified here, let's just say that Kira, in general, has been arguing for the free market from the pre-market perspective, which is, well, if it's more efficient and if people want it, and then maybe it's justified to that it exists, right? If AI art is what people want to buy, and if it's cheaper to produce, then maybe that's better for society. I hope I'm characterizing your position more or less correctly. Yeah. And Aaron, I hear you very concerned about, the ethical consequences and the consequences with respect to, intellectual property and justice and, in society, if AI were just to run rampant, if companies that could produce AI art just ran rampant without regulation, and it would infringe on the copyright and the negate the hard work that the more authentic artist would have been doing to create art. So here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to take a sort of a meta position, right? I'm going to say that. It seems to me there's a bias in the very term artificial intelligence. Why is it artificial? So why is digital artificial compared to analog? Or why is a document or a book that you read on your computer screen because it's in digital format, why is that less authentic, or why is that artificial compared to if you cut down a tree and then make paper and then make ink, you know, out of resources from the earth, and then put the ink on the paper using some kind of mechanical press? Why is the latter authentic, whereas the digital is artificial in some way? So why is artwork that's generated using certain types of technology that's now become available artificial, whereas artwork that's generated, you know, using ink by someone moving their hand, why is that in some way more genuine? So I would challenge that bias, and I think it's more a result of resistance to change than it is some kind of bona fide distinction. There's a lot of advantages to society by moving away from utilizing natural resources to, you know, to cut down trees and make paper, and to rather move things into digital format. I'm not saying there's not also environmental cost to digital. I mean, it takes energy, you know, to run the computers. But my argument is that it's a change. But why is it a negative change? Like, why are we moving from authentic to artificial? What's artificial about?
And I feel like that's part of my argument, right? Because when you're using artificial intelligence, there's still a person putting that input in. And yes, you might get something quicker, like, you know, so an artist, it takes them 10 hours to create a painting, and a person can put in a prompt and they'll get a painting in a minute. But it doesn't matter how long something takes to be created. It's still art, and it's still was directed by a conscious human being. And so, like, I think that's where it's like you need to embrace it.
I would challenge that, and I would challenge that by saying, you know, the Marshall McLuhan quote, that the medium is the message. The way we go about creating the art has a huge effect, not just on the product that is created, but on the world and on the person who's creating it. And it shouldn't be underestimated how much changing the process of creating art could change how we are affected as human beings. So if all I care about is making money and I'm an artist, then what am I incentivized to do in this type of situation? Become AI Art's best customer and produce as much art that I can sell to as many people as possible.
If that's your philosophy, if you think that mass will bring you more than quality.
Well, I mean, if you have more pieces of art.
The physical world is a strange world. So now I'm going to get even more meta. So isn't it the case that we're gradually, that the human race is gradually moving away from a physical world into more of a brain in a vat world? I mean, this is like one of the classic, you know, examples in that's used in philosophy of mind, you know, to try and imagine what it would be like to have a brain but no physical body, you know, and I just wonder if that's not what we're moving toward eventually, because it seems like the actual physical world is getting less and less important relative to the virtual world, what we call the virtual world. You know, ideas and communication that can be exchanged without actually having to physically move bodies to places. So now we can have meetings and exchange ideas and make decisions without physically moving your body to be in the same geographical location as other bodies. It can be done, you know, using digital media and so on. It's not completely true what I'm saying, because even digital media is in a way physical, and it relies upon physical things. You need energy that's produced in the physical world, and the devices, you know, the hardware is produced in the physical world. But there's still some kind of change happening where, and I gave the example before of, you don't need paper, you don't need to cut down trees anymore to make paper. Some people prefer it. They prefer reading their books on paper, just like some people prefer and always will prefer, you know, old analog vinyl records over modern digital media music formats. And people will always prefer the old art that was done with, you know, with a brush. Maybe I'm taking more of an empirical position. It seems like you, the two of you, are concerned with like what should be, and I'm thinking more like, well, I'm not sure so much what should be. I just think, as a practical empirical matter, you can't stop the inevitable. I do believe that government should regulate, but it just seems like we're moving away from the physical world into more of maybe eventually we will become brains in bats. And I don't know if that's good or bad. It's kind of scary, but you know, at the same time, we're destroying our environment. We are destroying the physical environment to the point that we may not have any choice but to lead much of our lives in a virtual world rather than actually walking around. I mean, if we can trust what the scientists are saying now, it's not going to be long until there's really not much wildlife left, and there's not any wild places left. They're cutting down forests. They're cutting down old growth forests as we speak. So the Amazon is one example of where there's deforestation happening very rapidly. And another example is even here in British Columbia. I'm not making an ethical argument or what should and shouldn't be. I'm just saying that it seems inevitable that things are changing dramatically. We are witnessing a dramatic, rapid change in our physical environment, to the point that we may be very reliant upon and exist largely in a virtual environment. And I do think it should be regulated, as I was saying, but I do think it should be regulated as more of a public sector thing than a private sector thing. This is where Kira and I disagree. So I hear you, Aaron. I hear your concern, but I'm not sure it's stoppable.
Well, I mean, this is my naive idealism, which is that I honestly think that if we as people go and support our artists and talk to them and buy their art, we can influence how the world will change, and we can ensure that some things don't change and some things don't pass away. And sure, I mean, you know, 80% of the population might never have paintings on their walls anymore in the future. Doesn't mean I can't have a painting on my wall. Like, we can, as individuals, choose to create the world we want to live in. We can be the change we want to see in the world. And I mean, there's a limit to that. And obviously, like, I mean, it's not like I can stop deforestation by leaving a tree in my yard. But there'll be one more tree in the world because I've left a tree in my yard. On the other side of things, I think you're being a little bit too pessimistic, Michael. I think that, like, with wildlife conservation and with responsible stewardship of the environment, we can continue to live on this planet as the human species for thousands of years.
I disagree with that. I think that we wouldn't be looking at a 2.5% or 2.5 degree increase in climate change if that was true, because we've made goals and goals and goals again to protect the planet, and we've failed every single time. And we keep putting more and more people on this planet. The thing that we can't do is restrict. We need to add.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't want to make this about climate change, because I don't feel like we actually have the time to sufficiently go through that in, like, the last, what do we have, 10 minutes, 15 minutes of the show. I really feel like that deserves to be in another show where we can flesh it out a little bit more. But I don't want to dismiss either of what you're saying. I do think it's important. But on the same side of things, I don't think we should give up. I think we should maintain our optimism and keep trying things and hope for a better future, because I think without that kind of determination, I mean, aren't we just living a self-fulfilling prophecy of we're going to end up in a world where every piece of art is artificially intelligent, and, like, it's created by an artificial intelligence, not a real person. You don't have the ability, human beings might actually lose the ability to appreciate art in general.
What do you mean real person? So if you have a technology which is able to create art, so I know it's not a person, although a person created or people created the technology. I guess I'm asking you, like, why is a real person more intrinsically valuable? Is there something don't you need to justify your claim that there's something intrinsically more valuable or maybe not intrinsically more valuable?
So I view art as being the creation of something that provides value to human beings that comes out of another human being's lived experience. So for instance, I write poetry. When I write poetry, I try to think about something in my experience. I wrote a poem that was called Sunshine at the Beach. And I just thought about what it felt like as a human being to experience sunshine on the beach and how that just made my day a better day and it was an enjoyable experience. And I tried to take that experience and put it into words so that other people could have a piece of that experience. Now, is a machine capable of doing that type of thing? I don't think it is in the way that human beings do, but I do think that human beings are capable of creating art, words, pictures, products of the same kind that could it's not going to be exactly the same, but it's good enough. It's 80% there. But fundamentally speaking, I think when you take a different pathway to creating art, you get different products because the pathway is what determines what kind of art you get. Like if you have a certain type of paintbrush, you get certain types of strokes. If you have a certain type of mind, you create one type of poetry. If you have a different kind of mind, a different kind of lived experience, you create a different type of poetry. And from an existentialism perspective as well, like what are human beings here on Earth to accomplish? Obviously, it's like, do we really need art? From a material, physical perspective, we don't need art, right? Like, we don't need it to survive. It's not shelter. It's not food. It's not family. It's not community. But at the same time,
culture and history.
It's culture and history. And it's something that we value. And I think that's why we judge it more harshly, because we understand it's culture and history.
I hear an implicit premise, which I'm going to challenge.
Sure, go ahead.
Which is that there's something like intrinsically good about human beings. Mm-hmm. Like there's something intrinsically valuable about human beings. And I know that.
Yeah, I do believe that. I do believe that I enjoy being a human being, and I believe that's intrinsically valuable, and I want to be a human being. I don't want to be a brain in a vat. Yes, I have this bias.
Right, but now I'm being the how do you say it? Like the thorn in the side of, you know, I'm going to be the person here that. Yes, I'm going to question even our most sacred premises, but I'm pointing out that it's a premise. So I heard in your last statement, your last expression, the implicit premise that somehow like what human beings produce or what human beings experience or what comes from a actual real human being is somehow intrinsically more valuable than what is produced, quote unquote, artificially. But I'm questioning that premise. Like, where does that... What's so great about human beings? I mean, look at how human beings are. I mean, all you have to do is just turn on the news for like 1 minute, and we're killing each other. We're murdering each other in the Middle East, and we're destroying the environment all around us. I'm not sure what's so great about human beings at all, and I'm not convinced that what human beings produce with their own physical hands is intrinsically, without having to explain why, more valuable than what can be produced digitally or, you know, quote unquote, artificially or with, you know, using digital technology rather than physical objects. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure that the human race deserves to be held to such a high, you know, high value that what people produce with their own hands is somehow assumed to be superior.
Yeah, that's the term is qualia, actually, is a philosophical term, is what you're talking about, is whether it is an instance that is subjective conscious experience. So the qualia of something, which is like kind of like the human consciousness perspective, I think it's kind of what Aaron's talking about. That's where I argue, and I say that there still can be qualia in artificial intelligence because there's still a conscious person inputting.
But what if there wasn't, Kira? What if there wasn't a conscious person? Could artificial intelligence...
But that's not what we have.
No, but we are talking about what things could be in the future, right? Like as we started at the beginning of the show talking about long-term planning, what if in the future there was an artificial intelligence that could produce art that was better than art because people genuinely appreciated it, not because they would pay more money for it? If that did exist in the future, would we have to conclude that we've created an intelligence that has qualia?
Depend on the algorithm and how that was created and whether or not you're actually like mixing biology with computers. Because somebody still has to be the creator of that AI. And so that would still give me the qualia. Like for me, like when I drive my car, I don't understand how it works, but I am driving that car. The car's not driving me.
Yeah.
So like I still take ownership over using a technology as a tool instead of something
If you were driving in an autonomous vehicle, then does the car have its own mind? Does it have its own ability to make its own decisions?
We have this anthropocentric view that human beings and only human beings have the capability of creating things that are somehow unnatural. I mean, that seems to be fallacious to me. So every other life form we call natural, all plants, all other animals besides humans, and then humans are like born natural. But then we like attribute with this, we impute this like this like supernatural ability on humans to create things that aren't natural. But that seems to be fallacious to me, because if we are natural beings, then anything we create is by inference natural. Everything's part of the natural world. I mean, even AI, even digital creations, even things that don't exist in what we call the physical realm, they're still in the natural realm. They may not be objects that you can pick up like a rock, but they are things in the natural world. The word natural, in a way, is this completely useless word, because it implies that there are things that are outside of natural. What are they? How can you say that, well, people can produce things that aren't natural? It just makes no sense to me. It seems like the world is the world, right? Everything is part of the world, and things have different forms. They could be physical objects with mass and extension in space, or they could be other types of objects, but they're all natural.
I mean, I would challenge that by saying, well, I mean, do you think there's a difference between living in an industrialized city versus living in a forest in the Amazon? Because I think it's pretty obvious why we consider one natural or more natural than the other, because one is more synthetic, one is more human created, one is an environment where humans have had significantly more influence, and one is an environment where humans have had significantly less influence. I can also understand, and I think you have a really good point here, that we shouldn't think of humans as existing outside of the physical world. We should think of humans as being a part of the human, as human beings as being part of the physical world, being connected to it. I would say human beings are unique among different kinds of animals because we do things differently. Like, I don't think chimpanzees have histories of thousands of years written in books and movies about it. Human beings do have those things. We have these technologies. We have these languages. We have these things that we create, and that does make us different than other species.
Different doesn't mean better, though.
I'm not saying. I'm not saying
better. You know, like nature, like your idea of nature versus city doesn't mean that nature is better. It's just different.
Well, my point was that there is what was, or there's the less complicated environment where humans haven't inhabited it and built roads and sewers and houses and skyscrapers and all of the things that are necessary to keep those things to function and technologies. And there's an environment where a person is living in the natural environment without all of those things.
I would argue that they're still connected, though. Like if you were to do any type of like atmospheric science, you would understand that like when like the wind's going through the world, like everything is connected.
I think what I would suggest is that there's ways we can argue for the preservation of a forest.
Or art.
Perhaps. Yeah, I'm going to get to that. Yeah. Not because there's something intrinsically better or more natural or more human or more authentic about a forest versus an industrialized area, or because there's something more authentic or natural about art that was created with a person's hands rather than AI. But because we can actually find scientifically verifiable reasons why it would be a good choice to maintain a forest for people's recreational use rather than pave it over. And because we can, there is actually scientific evidence emerging now which shows that people have better mental health when they can take a walk in a forest versus if they are surrounded by constantly by the noise of an urban area. There's also scientific data which will show that the pollution and the other environmental changes that can happen because of industrialization have physical impacts on people. It causes they cause cancer. They cause all kinds of other things. So I think we can use science to justify the choices we make, the policy choices we make, rather than having to appeal to like naturalness or something intrinsically, you know, more valuable about certain things than others. So with respect to art, it would seem like it would be a conversation we could continue. Like, what would be the best policy decisions as far as governmental regulation on copyrights and the way art's produced and all that? That's fine. But it wouldn't be because there's something intrinsically better about an old-fashioned painting than an AI painting. It would just be a question of what choices should we make as a society to balance out the competing interests, just like we do with environmental issues, or we should be doing.
So what you're proposing is that we need a scientific way of thinking about this as a society.
Well, I think that's why I think that artificial art is a good thing, because we have more people, and if there's more access to art, then more people can appreciate that art. Therefore, it's a good thing, whether or not it's made by a person who took 10 hours to make it or 2 minutes. It's the same way I feel about artificial intelligence and using it as a tool for anything. It's just giving more people more tools to be able to reason and think about their lives and their place in it. And I think that is an intrinsically good thing for society. That's why I think that private sector is good, because they are just creating without regulation, and I think that is needed for innovation.
Anyway, a very interesting discussion. Thank you so much to our listeners and our guests. I'll see you in the next show. Bye for now.
Please email us at hello@philosophyshow.ca. You can find the Canadian Philosophy Show at tcps.podbean.com and on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Bird note. Just what puts the hum in a hummingbird's wings? And why don't other birds' wings hum in flight? To figure it out, scientists used a specially built rig to measure air pressure, 12 high-speed cameras, and over 2,000 microphones to observe hummingbirds fluttering in place at an artificial flower. This allowed them to make 3D visualizations of the sound of a hummingbird's wing beats. When hummingbirds flap, they create lift both on the downstroke and the upstroke, so twice per wing beat. The researchers found that the hum derives from the difference in air pressure between the top and the bottom of the wings, which alternates 40 times a second as the hummingbird flaps. The rapidly shifting air pressure produces a harmonic set of sounds from low to high, creating that iconic musical hum. Other birds flap with power on the downstroke only, so there's no rapidly changing pressure difference when they fly, making them much quieter. Their wings might whoosh, but only a hummingbird's hum. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel. Want more Bird Note sounds, images, and stories delivered straight to your inbox? Subscribe to our weekly newsletter for a preview of the week's shows, stories, and stunning photos every Friday morning. Visit birdnote.org to sign up today.
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something every day, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday. You heard that right, Monday, from 3 to 4 p.m.